Next on BYUSN, what were the 10 best wins in year two of the Big 12 for both football and basketball? Dave and I made our list. We'll go over those. Plus, Jimmer, cruising with the Cougs, sits down with Spencer and Jerem to talk about the rise of BYU basketball and the influence of head coach Kevin Young.
Teyon Taylor and Mix Romanus are in studio with us this morning. It's their last hurrah for men's volleyball this weekend at the Smith Fieldhouse. And ESPN's final rankings are out for the 2025 recruiting class. Where's AJ on that list? And does it really matter if he's number one?
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Welcome, Dave.
Did you see what we just did there?
That was very nice.
We mixed it up.
Today is Friday, April 18th. My name is Jason Shepherd. He is still reliving a wild night at Miller Park and Gail Miller Field. Dave McCann.
It was one of those nights, right? Our game ended, and then like 3 hours later, the softball game ended. But men's baseball, they stunned 22nd-ranked Arizona in a big win. They got 8 runs in the 7th inning. That kind of blew that one open. And then 2 hours later came the big finish across the way at Gail Miller Field. I was home watching it going, man, how – first of all, as BYU got a shot, they're down by 4 with 2 outs in the bottom of the 7th. They only play 7, and they got 2 home runs. And then they force extra innings. And then here's how the ending looked and sounded last night.
Lilio is up the middle. BYU wins. They come from behind. The comeback Cougars take down the Utes 14-13.
We have seen some improbable games from the softball team on that field, and some of them against Utah over the years. But last night was one for the ages. When you had to have 4 runs out of nowhere, you get them on home runs, force that extra inning, and then load them up, and you beat the Utes like that. Amazing.
Yeah, if all you did was beat any team in that fashion, it's going to be huge. There's just something a little extra when it happens to be against that team in Salt Lake City.
The Utes, I think, had lost 8 or 9 straight. They thought they had it.
Yep.
And they did have it.
Yep.
And then BYU took it.
All right. All rise and shout. It's time for What's Trending.
Dallin Hall! What did we just see?
Tate was going to dive low. And
Devo dunked it!
Throws for Casey. Sees the football. Makes the catch. Wraps up and throws down Sanders. Through! 4-3!
All right, staying on the theme of big wins, we thought it might be fun today to rank and discuss BYU's best wins from year two in the Big 12 in football and in men's basketball. So this morning, Dave, you and I, our brain trust, Colton.
I think you and I are like everyone else. Whenever you see a big finish, you go, hey, remember that one time?
Yeah.
And then what about that one time?
It's the one you constantly go back and want to relive, right? We put together the list of the 10 best wins from year two in the Big 12 in football and men's basketball. So we're going to start with 10. We're going to go all the way to number one. Dave, why don't you start us off with number 10?
That improbable finish last night got me thinking about another improbable finish. Let's go to BYU and Oklahoma State. Game went back and forth. Cougars and Cowboys, but man, when it mattered the most, BYU got it done. There were big plays on both sides of the ball. This run right here is part of that final drive for BYU. They went 75 yards in the last 72 seconds. 10 seconds are left here, Shep. Darius Lasser's in the end zone. That place exploded like it hadn't exploded in a long, long time.
Yeah, it reminded me of the 2001 season with Luke Staley down the sideline. I still think that is the most rowdy I've ever seen LaBelle Edwards Stadium. That one was a close second. For so improbable the way that it ended, and it was such a high-scoring game anyway, back and forth between BYU and Oklahoma State. For it to end that way, just unbelievable.
And then Darius had his little dance ready in the end zone, which he said he didn't practice, but we know he did. What a magical moment.
Yeah, that was certainly one of those fantastic memories from last year. All right, number 9. We're going to go from football to basketball this time. And this one is against the 11-seed VCU team in the NCAA tournament where BYU won 90-81. The Cougars were the 6th seed. As I mentioned, VCU the 11th seed. It's the first round of the NCAA tournament. Richie Saunders led the way with 16 points. Yegor Demon added 15 points. BYU cruised to their first NCAA tournament win since 2011. They'd been searching for that for a long, long time. That was big.
out of the first round. That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
Finally felt like, oh, hey, this is it. This is out of the first round, which was amazing. I'm going to go to stay with basketball for number eight. There are big wins, and then there is a win like this one. When Kansas came to the Marriott Center for the very first time, and BYU just beat them. Senseless. Jayhawks were ranked 23rd. Cougars gave them a night they'd like to forget. Richie Saunders leading the way with 22 points. BYU blew them out 91-57. The 34-point win was BYU's largest victory against a ranked opponent in program history. And for the Jayhawks, the loss tied the biggest defeat in Bill Self's 21 seasons at Kansas. This one got America's attention. They did what?
That's one that you look at the box score and you're like, is that right? Is that a typo? No, it was not a typo. BYU was that dominant against the Jayhawks.
You see these highlights and they're just amazing. That night was one for the ages. Just ask Sherry Dew. Grew up in Kansas as a Jayhawk fan, now all true blue. She was there on the third row soaking it in. Big night.
All right, number seven. We're going to move back to football. And this is an interesting one because it was a big win at the time, but it became bigger as the season went on. And we're talking about the win in Dallas at SMU where the Cougars win 18-15. Jay Hill's defense kept the high-powered Mustangs offense out of the end zone, and a Miles Davis fourth down conversion set up a Will Ferrin game-winning field goal. Look at this.
How
look at him around the sideline. What a play. What a play. You see Kalani going nuts. I think we were all Kalani in that moment, and just an unbelievable win. And as I said, you knew it was big at the time, but as it goes on, you have SMU that goes to the college football playoff, and that was a big win, and it got bigger.
You know what else I loved? The navy and white uniform configuration there. So good. And, of course, Will Ferrin's foot was the difference maker in the end. Okay, let's go from seven to number six. We're going to stay with football because Kalani's all fired up, and we like that. How about the Alamo Bowl? In front of one of the largest, if not the largest, television audience in modern BYU history against a Heisman Trophy winner, Cougars dismantled Colorado 36-14. They win the Alamo Bowl. It was the most complete game of the season for BYU, propelled them to a final number 13 ranking in the top 25, which is going to propel them into the top 15 in August.
Yeah, I think my favorite part of the entire night, besides what happened on the field, was just the fact that clearly the broadcast was geared towards Colorado.
It was the Deion show.
It was geared towards Deion, Shador, and Travis Hunter. And BYU said, we'll have none of that. And it made it completely obsolete as that game progressed.
I love what Dewey Gray said in the interview with the guys on the ship earlier this week. He's down there in the tunnel, and Colorado comes out and he goes, really? These are their big guys? And then BYU comes out and he goes, now these are some big guys. We are going to kill them just based on the size in the tunnel. And boy, was he right.
All right, we've made the top five now. Men's basketball at number 10, Iowa State. The double overtime victory for the BYU Cougars in Ames. Maybe the wildest game of the year. Cougars overcame 29 turnovers to get the dramatic three-point win. How about that alley-oop to Dallin Hall?
Never saw that before.
Hey, that one was impressive.
Oh, look at that block.
23 points for Richie Saunders. Career high 22 from Dallin Hall. Obviously, the alley-oop is something we will never forget. And how about Trey Stewart with the perfect position for Dallin on that?
There was that play, and then we saw Kava's block, which were two amazing moments. One during the route, the other one as Kansas State made their climb back. And what I love most about that game is after BYU blew their big lead, they went toe-to-toe into the extra period on their floor and beat them anyway.
It is so hard to win in Ames, and for BYU to do that with 29 turnovers is crazy.
That's 29. That's insane.
That's crazy.
That's even more insane than all the other insanity. All right, let's move to number four, and we're going to go back to football. We'll go early in the season. This, in fact, is the Big 12 opener. This one put BYU on the national map. Kansas State came in ranked 13th. It was 6-3 before Tommy Prass' fumble return, and then the wheels came off. This punt return, one for the ages, probably should have got him All-American status for Parker Kingston. BYU wins it 38-9, largest margin of victory ever against a top 15 program. So they get into the top 25, and Shep, they stayed in after this night.
So for me, I believe that was the biggest and most important win of the year for the reason that you brought up, that it got everybody's attention. It's what put BYU on the map, and that 2.5 minute stretch where BYU was actually trailing and then in a matter of minutes had completely taken the game over.
That Parker Kingston punt return, and Cougar Nation, we know we're speaking to you too, is whenever you see that, as it flashes on YouTube or whatever, you have to stop and watch the whole thing.
That's right.
It doesn't matter how many times you've seen it. It's so improbable for a guy who botches the catch. He's running backwards, then he's running sideways, and then he's running forwards. I think 140 yards he covered during this thing, and that sound in the stadium too when he crossed the goal line, even though he almost dropped the ball a little early. That too was another moment where it was like, wow, I'm glad I'm here for this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure there were a lot of BYU fans that were glad they were in Tucson at the McHale Center for our number 3 win of the year. Men's basketball at number 19 Arizona. 96-95 Cougars get the win. BYU's first big road win of the year. They outlasted the Wildcats. Two clutch free throws from Richie Saunders, finished with 23 points. The win helped BYU jump into the top 25, where they stayed the rest of the season. And this win was part of the 9-game win streak that included wins at Iowa State and Kansas. And hey, at the end of the day, the only chant that mattered was "Go Cougs" after BYU won.
This game was big because it said, we're here now. You know, we're not just going to beat Kansas and then fall back down. We're not going to just beat Iowa State and fall back down. We're here with the big boys. We go into Tucson and beat Arizona, put more points on them. Well, since anybody not named Jimmer 14 years, actually it was 15 or 16 years earlier when he scored all those points in Tucson and led BYU to what? What did they get that night, 97 or so? They got 96 on this one. BYU lights it up at the McHale Center.
Another place so incredibly difficult to win at.
And the Arizona baseball team's here this week. I still don't think they like what happened over there in Tucson. It didn't help them last night. Okay, now let's go to number 2, and this is where we get into the gray area, because what's the biggest, what's the most emotional, this one was good. Arizona win was outstanding. How about this one against the 3-seed Wisconsin Badgers in the second round of the NCAA tournament? Richie Saunders, a team-high 25. Cougars led by as many as 14 in the first, 13 in the second, and the Badgers came charging back. Biggest play was on the final play, Moet Mag's defense against Wisconsin All-American John Tonji. He finished with 37, but he needed 39 to force overtime. But Mag was there to deny him. He missed the shot. Time expires. Cougars win. They go to the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2011.
This is one of those games that I will always feel a little weird about this, because I did not get to watch this live. I was with baseball in Cincinnati, and our flight literally left right before the tip. And we landed right after the game. So as we landed, everybody turns on the phones. We see what happened. The plane erupts that they won. And then I watched it back afterwards. I stayed up very, very late to watch this game.
It was easier to watch it having known how it ended.
There was a lot less stress watching this game. Knowing how it played out. What a big win to go to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, maybe among the biggest that we've seen in our lifetime to get to that, and to beat a good team to do it. Certainly, number 2, you could make an argument for number 1, but I think we all have a feel for what the biggest moment was.
All right, number 1, and you brought up biggest wins, most emotional.
Most fun.
We went with football in Salt Lake City against the rival, winning 22-21. And look, is it maybe the biggest win? Is it the best played game, most exciting?
No.
Not really, but you can't take the emotion out of it when it's the rivalry game. Look, back to Harlene, we all know how big it is to win in Salt Lake. Trailing 21-10 at halftime, BYU drove thanks to a holding call that was legit and a clutch catch from Chase Roberts. Big run from Hinkley Ropati. Will Farron, ice water in his veins. He was laughing on the sideline. He knew he was going to make it, and he did. A 44-yard game-winning field goal. BYU improved to 9-0 and beats Utah and Salt Lake.
That brings us full circle to last night, because Utah's not great in softball this year, but BYU had to find a way magically toward the end to pull it out in that rivalry setting. And then, of course, we go back to what we just saw with Farron's kick. With Chase Roberts' amazing catch at midfield.
Yep.
Keelan Marion's kickoff return in the first half. Those just add up to, when you think of the great season BYU had, you go right back to there.
All right, so that's our list, and we're going to throw it out to the listeners and the viewers and BYU fans out there with our question of the day. What was BYU's best football or men's basketball moment from year 2 in the Big 12? Our first response comes from Instagram, and it's from Tyson_Hunter123, says either beating Utah in football or beating Wisconsin to play in the Sweet 16. So okay. He went with our top two.
He did not see our list. We just barely revealed
that. That is correct.
All right. @2_6_schemo on X. There was that incredible 6.5-minute stretch against Kansas State in football when KSU was the favorite to win the conference, and then BYU was showing they're ready to contend. That was fun.
Yeah, it
That's
was.
That's his big moment.
All right, and then on X, @CDShaw99, winning a nail-biter over Wisconsin for the first Sweet 16 appearance since Jimmer. And look, honestly, 1 and 2... Again, you actually thought that number two should be number one.
Well, the more I thought about it, once you take the emotion out, you're thinking, what's biggest?
Yeah.
Maybe going to the Sweet 16 is bigger than football beating anybody that didn't include the college football playoff.
Yeah.
But and there were bigger wins than Utah last
year.
The way Utah was and the way BYU was.
You can't take the emotion out of it. It's the rivalry game.
Once you throw the emotion in, you're like, well, that just goes to the top.
All right, continue to weigh in on our question of the day on X, Facebook, and on Instagram.
ESPN's final rankings of the 2025 recruiting class have BYU's A.J. DeBonsa ranked number one, the overall prospect. 24/7 Sports has Kansas-bound Darren Peterson as their number one overall player. Does it really matter who's number one at this point, knowing that you got him?
Does it matter? No. Is
but
it fun?
Nice.
Is it fun when you see him at number one? You better believe it is. It's a little bragging rights, right? This is our guy, and he's number one.
So when BYU and Kansas play next year, they can settle it on the court.
Look, and I don't know. I've not heard AJ talk about this. And look, I understand he's about winning games, but there's a certain amount of pride that goes with that. And I would imagine that he would want to be number one. Every player would.
Sure, and they all want to be number one in the draft.
Absolutely.
No one says, oh, I'm really hoping to be number three.
Like my goal has been to be the fourth pick in the NBA draft all my life.
You still get a lot of money, but now I want to be number one. But not to be lost on that ESPN list as you look down it. And there at number 55 is Xavier Staten, who was the biggest signee in the history of BYU until DeBonsa. So now you got two in the top 55 coming in next year. Don't sleep on Staten.
The amount of lobs at the rim with AJ, Kaba, Staten. Can you imagine how difficult it is going to be to defend the rim if you're an opponent this upcoming season?
I have been trying to imagine that. And that's why we're excited about it, because you've got guys outside who can stick the three, which have a defense going, are we going out or are we packing it in? Do we take away the lob or do we get in Richie's face or Dawson's face or whoever else's face to stop the three? And when both are working, you're in big trouble. And they have the ingredients to put a lot of teams in big trouble.
All right, since the theme of our trending so far has been a little basketball, a little football, how about we switch things to football for just a minute? The transfer portal spring window opened this week in college football. Do you think BYU football needs to add at any positions through the portal?
I think BYU is solid and ready to go. So when you look at that, you go, where could we add some depth? Mm-hmm. Maybe the tight end spot. Brock Harris, their big signee, still got a year left and off to a mission. Some kids like that. So you got some places to fill. Carson Ryan has a year left. So maybe there, and you're always looking for help at the defensive tackle spot. But BYU can roll out their depth chart, first string and second string, and go toe-to-toe with the teams on that schedule already. So they're really in a different spot than a lot of teams. A lot of teams lost a lot of guys and are looking to rebuild their team. Getting Keanu Tanevasa down here out of the portal was their biggest get, maybe in a long, long time, for what we expect him to do to that defensive line as a leader and a tackler. And so we really look back and we go, oh, you know what? Cupboard's pretty full.
Yeah.
And if you look at the guys who've gone into the portal from BYU, and we wish them all the best, but not one of them was an impact player that would affect the two-deep roster. And so they want to play. And there's roster limitations, and there's places to play in other spots. So you say, hey, more power to you. You're only young once.
Yeah.
You know, you stay on the bench or you can go find somewhere to play.
Yeah, when you have as much production coming back that BYU has off of a team that finished the year with 11 wins, I really don't feel like there's any glaring hole at any specific position. I'm like you. I think you can always, if there's an opportunity to get some depth on the defensive line or even at the running back position, there's a chance anywhere. But I really look up and down this, and not saying that it's perfect, but I don't look at any position and say, wow, man, really, really need something. I don't know if there is that. What a great spot for BYU football to be in heading into this year.
Yeah. It's what exactly what Kalani and his staff set out to do a couple of years ago when they didn't have any depth.
That's right.
And they're coming into the Big 12 going, we got to build up front, and then we got to have some guys behind. And here we sit.
All right.
Baseball tonight, BYU and 22nd-ranked Arizona back at it. Coverage starts at 6:30 Eastern time. Jason on BYU Radio, Gary and me on ESPN+. Cougars are going to try to win the series tonight.
Yeah, Arizona's only lost one Big 12 series. That was to Baylor in the year. Cougs trying to make it two.
And I think the snow has moved out for the day.
I think we're going to be all right. Up next, Jimmer Fredette sat down with Spencer and Jerem on the cruise to discuss the rise of BYU basketball in the Big 12 and Kevin Young's impact as BYU's head coach. This is BYU Sports Nation. We're live in Studio B with your day-to-day BYU sports play-by-play. That's Dave McCann. My name is Jason Shepherd. And earlier this week on the cruise, Jimmer Fredette sat down with our own Spencer and Jerem to discuss the rise of BYU basketball in the Big 12. And, oh, they're definitely rising. And Kevin Young's impact as BYU's head coach and about his experience, speaking of Jimmer, in the Olympics. Here's their conversation.
Jimmer, welcome to the sway.
Is that what we're calling this
right now?
This is what we're doing.
This
right
is the
now.
Sway. It's become the
all
sway.
Of us are swaying. I'm like, what is going on? It's my first cruise, so I'm not used to this.
It's a little. The first one I went on was not like this. It was not like this.
No, it was
but
like, it was fine.
There weren't as many BYU fans.
Yes,
this is awesome.
Sure.
This is awesome.
That's for sure.
Aside from some notable movement in the ship over the past hour, yes. How have things been for
oh,
you?
I thought you were going to transition that with movement in Cougar. Anchor boy?
No. Listen, give me my opportunity.
Okay, my bad, okay, my bad, dude.
Okay, we'll get there. We'll get there. But how have things been for you the first few days of cruising with the Cougs?
Yeah, no, it's been fun. You know, we knew what we were signing up for when we got onto the cruise, right? We knew there was 3,500 BYU fans here. We knew it was going to be a great time. But the way that they've decked it out, all BYU, has been really fun to see, and people just genuinely love the school. Like, they just really do. They're just out there. They just want to be a part of everything that's going on. The bartenders, you know, they have all soda, you know, all the way across instead of liquor and all this stuff. So it's perfect for us. And it's been a fun time. And Whitney and I are enjoying it with no kids right now. So it's been good.
Let's talk about your bracket. Your bracket was unbelievable, right? How many did you end up getting correct? Because you were like almost perfect through two rounds.
Yeah, I was close. I was. I think I missed two in the first round, and then I did pretty well. I got. I mean, I was like top five in the bracket that I was in for Yahoo Sports. I was doing stuff with Yahoo Sports, and it was doing really well. And then, you know, at the end, Duke killed me for winning the whole thing because I had them winning it, and that's what ultimately just didn't end up happening. But I was like, I was doing real well. I usually don't do that well, so I was glad it was public when I did it well, right? Like, that's what you want. If you're going to do something, do it public, right? As long as it's good, you're all set. But, yeah, it was fun.
That was awesome. Yeah.
That was good.
Speaking of the bracket and BYU basketball, what was it like emotionally for you to watch BYU get back to the Sweet 16 for the first time since you were playing?
And in Denver, where you did it.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was right up the street from us, right? So it was super easy to get there. I was able to go both rounds. The kids loved it. They had a great time. They were looking for Cougar Tails. They didn't have them, you know, at the arena. But they enjoyed going to the game. And it was just the energy was awesome, right? It was sold out for both games. I knew that was going to be 80% BYU fans. Like, there was blue in there everywhere. And the energy was just incredible to watch them go through that and do the same type of thing that we were able to do and be able to win those two games and get to a Sweet 16 again and have BYU be super relevant again in the basketball world has been really fun, because now obviously that momentum is going to be moved forward into this next year with the recruiting class that we have coming in. And so it's a good time to be a BYU basketball fan. And that was special for the guys. I was just happy for everyone involved with the coaching staff to the players and the fans. It was really cool.
I didn't ever think we could get to this point where there would be a number one recruit in the country who's not a member of the church who wants to come to BYU. Obviously, the amazing staff, the amazing culture, the winning, the development, competitive NIL all combined to make this possible. Where are we headed? Because what we're seeing with BYU feels like we're perhaps going into uncharted territory already.
Yeah, no, we already are, for sure. I mean, it's just the fact of the matter. I mean, we were just prepared for what was coming, and I think that we did a great job getting everyone collectively involved, from, you know, the NIL side to the staff to the administration to the sports administration. Like, everybody was aligned of like, hey, this is an opportunity for us to be great. And if BYU is great, it doesn't also just mean that we're good at basketball or we're good at football. It means that the church is out there. And I think that's the ultimate goal, is to be able to reach as many people as we possibly can and go out and serve. And I think being able to be in front of millions of fans and be in the limelight is good for BYU, and it's good for the church, it's good for the program. So I think all of these things are a greater plan, so it's good.
Kevin Young, in 1 year, I mean, think about this. Yeah. It hasn't even been, from the time we were talking right now, it hasn't even been 365 days.
Yeah. Wild.
Since he was hired as the head coach of BYU. Why do you feel like he's a guy that is ready to handle the rigors of balancing NIL, new age recruiting, and now very, very quickly increasing expectations for BYU basketball?
Yeah, I think for him, this is a little bit more normal to him, I feel like, than the old college was, because he's been in the pros, right? So they deal with contract situations all the time. They deal with free agency all the time. You know, looking at guys from other teams in your league, like, that are playing and being like, hey, I like that guy. Maybe he'll go in the transfer portal. Maybe he'll become a free agent. If that's the case, we can look at that. So he's kind of been in that world before. So I feel like he was really well suited going into that, whereas, you know, if you're an old college coach, like, you may not, you know, may not have caught on quite as quickly, or are stubborn and don't want to do something along those lines, or they retire and they're just like, we're done, you know what I mean? So new people are coming in, so he was prepared for that. He understood the system, he knew what was coming, and obviously people want to come play for him because he, you know, coached the best players in the world, and he's done it at a high level. He's helped develop them. He's an offensive genius. Like, people know that, and they see that, and they're like, hey, this is a good guy to go help develop you as a basketball player. And he brought in a pro staff and a pro system, so he did it the right way in this today's day of NIL basketball. So it's fun to see, and he's just a good guy. I mean, the two coaches that we have in our heading our programs for basketball and football is just special right now, along with all the other coaches we have at BYU. It's just a really good age for coaches at BYU.
Remind me, did you know him in the NBA as like a member of the church on staffs? Did you interact with him? I assume he wasn't on the Suns quite yet when you had a minute there.
Yeah, he was not on the Suns yet. I think he was in Philly. So we obviously ran into each other. The place that we ran in and knew each other first was when I was playing with the Westchester Knicks, and he was with the Delaware 87ers.
Yeah,
I think he was the opposing head coach on teams you played against.
Correct. He was the opposing head coach of the teams, and he's like, it wasn't fun game planning for you, because at that time I was scoring nicely as well, and we played them a lot too, because, you know, proximity in the G League is important, because you don't travel too much. So yeah, we played quite a few times then. That's how I got to know him a little bit, and then obviously he kept moving up the rankings, and then just would see him and say hello. But obviously, you know, when that came into fruition, I was like, yeah, that's obviously a great hire.
Jimmer Fredette is on BYU Sports Nation. We are cruising with the Cougs. I know that you're a fan of guys getting paid. And because of, I mean, you understand how much work goes into this. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I know people have joked about, oh, what would it have been for Jimmer? And I'm like,
I was just thinking of what the number would be.
We don't know. And it's probably a little bit of a sore spot.
And it's probably $4 million.
Right. Yeah. Okay? But along with this, you know, NIL craze and the growth that has come there, how do you feel about the perpetual free agency situation and the transfer portal that is now becoming so overwhelming in college athletics and certainly in basketball?
Yeah. No, I talked about this the other day, social media, just about the transfer portal and everything. It's obviously, you know, it's more power to the kids, right? They're able to go out there and test what their worth is, you know, every single year if they want to. And, you know, for them, it's great. Like, that's what you probably should do as a player. If you want to make more money, if you want to be more valuable, you go out there, see what you can get. And then even if it's just leverage for getting back to your own school and be like, hey, you got to pay me more or whatever that is. So I understand the thought process, the mindset behind it. But it is kind of hard to navigate that whole system, specifically when the date is before the season's over with. with. So these guys are trying to recruit people while they're playing still. And, you know, that's obviously, I don't think that's fair. I think they need to move that back and make sure it's after the season so that then you can start talking with kids. And then what I think they need to do is I think they need to get into multi-year contracts. Like, that's my biggest thing. Like, if you can just kind of set it up where it's, hey, we're going to do this like a professional. We're a professional team. That's what we are. We're playing. Let's do it professionally. And let's, hey, all right, let's do a 2-year deal, a 3-year deal. We'll pay you this amount of money. If you want to get out and leave, or it's going to be some type of buyout situation, whether it's from, you know, BYU or the team that's bringing you in is going to get a buyout. So a lot of these smaller schools that are, you know, like a farm system for, you know, like a Kentucky or a different team like that for BYU. Say, hey, we got a kid, but he's on a 2-year deal. If you want him, you're going to have to pay us. It's been a $500,000 back. Yeah. Here's the buyout, and now
smaller
you're coming through.
Smaller program benefits.
Correct. Smaller program, and now they get to go use that money to go find someone else, right? So it's like just leveling the playing field, going that situation. It's a very European-type situation. Like, that's what they do in Europe. They do it every year. There's 1-2-year deals. They're doing a little buyout situations. There's always free agents. There's a ton of them, and they're kind of mixed. So it's a very European type system. But I think if they could do that, it's going to settle the storm a little bit and like be like, I can't just go into the portal without some type of, you know, interest or benefit for the team and for yourself, right? Like, I think that there needs to be some lockstep there. But if they can do that, I think it'll be fine.
I wonder if there will be a players union and then they have a collective bargaining agreement and so on and so forth. We'll see. Yeah. At what point, and maybe you're still in the middle of this, have you emotionally gotten over getting injured in the Olympics? Because that was hard to watch. Because I know you had a dream, and you guys had a shot at the gold, and you tear your groin in a crazy way.
Yeah, no, I'd never been injured like that before. Like, I've been relatively healthy my whole career and never had anything like that. And, of course, you know, second game in the very beginning, just tear adductor and the gracilis, like, 2 ligaments, and just couldn't. Like, people were like, could you try? I couldn't try to play. It just, I had no. It was like, it's like tearing your ACL. Like, you can't move on it. It's unstable. You know what I mean? So it was devastating, to be honest with you. Like, we were, you know, a lot of tears, you know, after that for a few different days. And I was just sitting there, but I couldn't tell anybody about it because the FIBA rules, if I like had no chance to play, they could have said, you don't get to sit on the bench. So I would have had to just sit in the stands. And I felt like I was more valuable, at least being on the bench, like trying to help them coach almost and say what's going on and yelling at the refs or whatever I could to like help. And so so no one knew what happened.
You couldn't explain it.
Couldn't explain it until after the Olympics. So everyone's like, what's going on? Why aren't you playing? And that type of thing. So that was hard, but I felt like it was the best part of the team. And, you know, you're never going to get over something like that. You know what I mean? But I've come to terms with it. Obviously, it's something where I truly believe everything happens for a reason. Like, that's just me as a person. I don't know why it happened or what the purpose was. But for me, it's about, all right, understanding, like, that's not the most important thing in my life, right? Like, my family and faith, those are the most important things. If I can have that perspective and that be my plan A, it puts things at least a little bit more at ease. Like, there's a greater plan out there, and some people will benefit from hearing my story and understanding what the difficulty was, because there's people that have it way worse than I have, and you just understand that. And I was an Olympian, so I mean, you can always have that and had a great experience, and you know, you move on.
I thought you posted up well against LeBron on the front of the boat in the opening ceremony. I thought that was a great move.
I said, yeah, I was like, where's the flag? Okay, that's where they're going to be. So we just stood there, and it was pouring rain the whole time.
Yes.
And we said, no one wanted to go out there at first because it was raining. We're like, no, we're going out there. And we stood out there for like an hour and a half before it started just to like be in that spot, because I was like, Mom, you're going to see me on TV, right? Like, this is going to be the spot.
Yes.
And so we made sure that happened.
Shout out to Alan Kay. That's what's up. That's right. That's what's up.
Kay, the incredible pickleball player, apparently, Jimmer. We talked about. Yeah.
Kay, oh, yeah. Kay plays like 5 days a week.
Making some waves.
She's good. She was a good tennis player when she was younger. She's transitioned to pickleball, and she wants to take over the world.
First team all Glens Falls pickleball. Yes, I love that. Go. That's great.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, as we finish this interview, I also do need to point out that Jimmer's passion was felt in the Olympics, and at least one official, correct me if I'm wrong, told you that you needed to settle down, correct?
100%. Like, I was yelling. It was Vlad. His name was Vlad. Vlad is a good guy. And I was sitting there and I was just yelling at him like the whole time. And he looks at me, he's like, Jimmer, you got to calm down. I was like, Vlad, this is all I can do. Let me just yell at you. I'm like, I'm not trying to be up mean or anything, but this is how I'm venting right now. And, so I was just trying to yell at anybody. That was like the first game afterwards. So it was like real raw and emotional. So I probably went over the line a little bit, but I was doing everything I could.
We're here for it.
Any Big 12 ref we don't agree with. Vlad, yeah. You're Vlad. Killing me, Vlad.
That's all I can do.
All I can do from here.
Jimmy, you're the best. Great to talk to you, man. Yeah.
Thanks,
Jimmer. Glad to have you on the boat.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
The great Jimmer Fredette, always welcome on BYU Sports Nation. After last night's wild finish, we can't wait for the encore. BYU and Utah resume their softball showdown 8:30 tonight Eastern Time at Gale Miller Field. Coverage on ESPN+.
Still to come, another track and field record goes down, plus a look ahead to the weekend across BYU Sports. Headlines next on BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to Studio B. Jason, Dave, let's get to today's headlines.
Let's start with number one, shall we?
Let's do it.
Speaking of number one, AJ Tabansa is number one, as ESPN released their final top 100 player rankings for the 2025 recruiting class. AJ at one, Xavier Staten is at 55. And BYU getting two top 55 players to join the team next year. ESPN also saying it's the seventh best center is Staten in the recruiting class.
We've been talking about it today. What a wild finish at Gale Miller Field last night. BYU softball beat Utah 14-13 on a Lily Owens walk-off single in the eighth inning. After trailing 13-9 with two outs in the bottom of the seventh, Ilova Brittingham's three-run home run and Lindy Milkowski's solo shot tied the game at 13 before Owens' single won the game. Both teams will go head-to-head again tonight, 8:30 Eastern on ESPN+.
That finish was like a Will Ferrin field goal. BYU baseball upset 22nd-ranked Arizona 12-5 yesterday in game one of their series at Miller Park. Cougars trailed 5-4 in the bottom of the seventh and then scored eight runs. Both teams back in action. Game two, 6:30 Eastern on BYU Radio and ESPN+.
Number 8 men's volleyball hosts Pepperdine in a pair of matches tonight and tomorrow. Now, tomorrow night's match is senior night and will honor 5 BYU seniors, including Teon Taylor and Mix Romanus, who will join us in our next segment. You can't see them, but they're here. Trust me, they're here. You can watch both matches at 9 Eastern on BYU TV.
From the track, Lexi Holiday-Lowry smashed BYU's 5K record at the Brian Clay Invitational in California, 14:52.93. Beating Olympian Whitney Orton Morgan's previous record by 20 seconds. 20 seconds.
20 seconds.
Holly Lowry's time is the second fastest in the NCAA this season, third fastest ever, which is impressive. Tyler Matthews also ran the second fastest men's 800 time in program history, also at the Brian Clay Invitational. He did it in 1:46.20. We have some fast kids.
Yes, we do. Brinley Anderson of BYU Gymnastics scored a 9.825 on the balance beam at the NCAA National Championships. Anderson finished in 16th place overall.
Women's golf, 8th place in the Big 12 Championships in Houston. Freshman Najee Armacool was BYU's highest finisher at 14th overall. 11 birdies, 4th most in the tournament.
Women's tennis beat 10-seed Kansas State in the second round of the Big 12 Championships yesterday and advanced play 2-seed UCF later this afternoon. And men's tennis lost to Oklahoma State in the first round of the Big 12 Championships in the men's bracket. All right, after the break, men's volleyball seniors Teon Taylor and Mix Romanus join us in studio to preview senior night matches against Pepperdine this weekend. There they are. This is BYU Sports Nation.
And he puts that one away. Teon Taylor, Romanus, out of the back row. And the ace. Teon Taylor did that last night, too. Romanus again!
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation, live from Studio B. As you can see, we're a little bit more relaxed
we're in
setting.
The lounge.
Yes, we're just lounging here with our guests from BYU Men's Volleyball. A couple of big matches against Pepperdine, and we've got a couple of seniors here, Teon Taylor, Mix Romanus. Guys, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Awesome to be here.
Thanks for having us.
It's all business tonight and tomorrow. But let's climb inside your head for just a couple of moments. It's the last weekend to be in front of the Rock at the field house. What's that? What's the Rock meant to you?
It's meant so much, you know, just being a walk-on on the team and just having BYU, the coaches, and everybody here take a shot on me and just being able to prove my worth and what I believed this whole time is, and just being able to do it one more time is just awesome.
Yeah, same here. I mean, being lucky enough to come here to BYU, getting the offer to come here was always a blessing. And I mean, man, The Rock has really put out every game. No matter, even if we play someone who's unranked, ranked, doesn't matter. The Rock always shows up. Man, it's always electric in there. I love it, dude. I love it. I'm going to miss it. But we're going to hopefully leave this season with a big old bang here with against Pepperdine.
Well, and the good news is for you guys is you have matches to play. So your mind will be occupied because there's a lot on the line. Seating's on the line. You know, pride is on the line. I mean, you want to beat, you want to win these games. So will that help with sort of keeping the emotions in check of what this weekend means for you guys? Mix, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's as we stated before, just talking about it, it's all business now. Like, the emotions will help me keep in check, will keep me focused on the game for sure. But, man, either way, no matter who we play or who we're up against, I just want to beat their butts, dude. I just want to beat them, man.
What about for you, Tion?
Yeah, I mean, we're coming off a couple of losses, and, you know, those, you think about them all the time, and now is our next chance to rectify those losses. And so I'm just ready and excited to play.
In that arena over there, which gives you such a great home court advantage, is it a bigger crowd when you slap an ace or when you pound one at the net? What do you enjoy the most, Nix?
Oh, when you rip one at the net, I think. Like, the ace is nice because the serving's the only thing you have in control in volleyball. Right. That's the only thing you can control. Everything else is just chaos, controlled chaos. But, man, when you just get a rip, you see a seam in the block or you hit around the block and you just rip it, dude, the electricity you feel, your teammates feel, and what the crowd gives you, man, that combination is just something else.
Yeah, for me, I don't get a lot of aces, so it's got to be hitting.
It's all in that.
Yeah, it's got to be hitting. It's so much fun, or just a stuff block. A stuff block is electric.
But is it the equivalent of a big dunk in a basketball game?
Yeah, so I grew up playing basketball, yeah. And the reason I fell in love with volleyball is you get the same type of emotions in volleyball a lot more often. Like, if you get a stuff block or a big hill, like, the crowd goes wild. Whereas basketball, that's only going to happen if you really boom on somebody.
Yeah, that's true.
And you're sporting the Allen Iverson jersey. That's not just fashion. You're a big Allen Iverson guy, right?
That's my guy. Growing up, I loved watching his highlights, and I loved the heart that he played with. You know, it doesn't matter your skill. Who wants it more? And that's what I love about it.
Mix, what has this BYU experience done to prepare you for the rest of your life? You may not have the Rock behind you cheering at every decision you make moving forward, but you've had it for a handful of years. What's it done to prep you?
Man, I think just, especially at BYU, sure, I'm not a part of the church, but it's definitely boosted my faith. I'm a Christian at heart also. So it's just, when talking about life in general, I'll definitely put that up there. But also just competing at this high level with such a big crowd. I mean, not even with the big crowd, it's just competing on the court. That prepares you for everything. I mean, the emotions you go through, the different battles you have to face, like on the court, off the court, passing, I had a bad pass here, got to focus on the next one. I think that's in life. Like, when you mess up at your job or whatever, and the next play, you're like, all right, I know what I'm doing. I've done this a million times. Let's just do it again and do it right this time. So I think, like, little things like that, just the mental resilience that it's helped build has just been awesome.
You know, and Tion, you guys were talking about just how exciting it has been for you guys to be able to play at the Smith Fieldhouse and the enthusiasm and excitement that you feel playing there. But, you know, to kind of take that a little further, the overall BYU experience, what has it meant to you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I wasn't a BYU fan growing up. My buddies were, and I just wanted to be the devil's advocate. But BYU took a shot on me, and I'm forever thankful for it. There's this saying, BYU came through me, and I love that. Like, I'm forever grateful for every good thing I have going forward is because of BYU. And I love it, and I wouldn't change anything about being here and about this place.
How about Sean Olmstead? How's he improved your game? The Olmstead name is men's team, women's team. It's everywhere here at BYU. But you've had Sean as your head coach. What's he done for you?
I like the grit that he's helped give us a bit more. Because, I mean, you guys already know Sean. He's kind of a dog in his own world. Yeah. You know, running the mountains, running the 100-milers or whatever. He won't talk about it. But the dude's a dog. And definitely you see that kind of appeal, his passion for the sport over the years. Every year it's still the same. He's still passionate, still super into it. And that kind of bleeds through us, I believe. So I think that mainly, just like the passion and the focus and the grit that we have so far, that's definitely spoken the most to me and it helped me out the most.
Yeah, for me, it's just he doesn't do the politics thing. He just wants guys on the court that are going to battle. And that's what I love. I don't want the politics. I just want to play ball. And that's what Sean's all about. It's just playing ball and who's going to play ball the best. And I think that's why you see us having so many subs is just, you know, we're a deep team and we're able to do that. And we all love each other and we're able to support each other because he's instilled that kind of mantra in us.
Oh, yeah. As we mentioned, you have two matches against Pepperdine, you know, tonight and tomorrow. So obviously there's volleyball to play. Talk to me about the matchup against Pepperdine and what you expect in that matchup tonight and tomorrow.
Yeah, I expect them to bring their all. You know, for them, seeding's on the line, but they're hosting the MPSF tournament. Right. So they're going to want to get the highest seed they can in that tournament because they're going to have home field advantage. And so they're going to bring it all tonight. And for us, you know, it's our last chances to play in the Smith. So we got to be dialed. We got to be locked. And I'm ready for a fight.
As you look at the tournament next week, in the games that you've lost, they've been toe-to-toe battles. I look back to the one you had with UCLA at their place, and they'd be the number one seed most likely. Makes a win tonight and tomorrow. What is that? How high of a seed can you get, and how does it shape next week?
I might have to tell me a third or three. Three is our highest. But, I mean, going there will just make the tournament slight. Not that it's easy by any means because it's a very competitive bracket or just conference in general for us. But a higher seed will definitely help us make it a little bit easier for our path to make it to the finals and hopefully winning the MPSF tournament.
We got one last blast, one last weekend to raise the roof over there.
Yep.
And then the rest of the time you'll come back as a guest. Yeah. So you're in your uniform tonight. I would imagine this would be the biggest Friday and Saturday nights of your life.
Yeah. I mean, my whole bunch of family's coming in to support me for this last time. And I'm just excited and grateful that I get to be there. And I think for me this weekend, you know, it's about competing, but it's about having fun with the boys. Mm-hmm. You know, it's my last chance to play with, you know, Migs and some of the guys here. And just I think just reminding myself that if I have fun out there, like, we're going to do our job.
Well, guys, we appreciate you coming in. Good luck against Pepperdine and then into the postseason. We're going to give you some BYU Sports Nation karma. You can take that into the matches and further on as you guys play. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Right, there we go. It's Teyon Taylor and Mix Romanus join us here in Studio B.
Enjoy that moment tonight and tomorrow.
Yes,
you'll
enjoy
never forget them the rest of your life.
Definitely.
Number 7, number 8, that's the matchup at the Smith Fieldhouse, 9 Eastern time. You can watch it live right here on BYU Today and tomorrow here on BYU TV.
All right, we'll put a bow on this Friday's show with our elite voice of the day and today's rise and shout out right after the break. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
All right, welcome back to BYU Sports Nation.
This is as close to the cruise as we got.
Look, we held down the fort all week long. We just wanted to know what it would potentially feel like
if we looked out our cabin window and, oh yeah, it was awesome. Look at that.
Look, I realize that's not real. Shot. I mean, that's real. That actually happened. It's not real for us, but it does make me feel a little better. Yeah. You know what also makes me feel a little bit better? We know that the cruise is officially over. They're back in L.A.
Back in L.A. And they announced another one coming in 2027. So
you think,
save your money.
You think we're going to be able to get on that one?
Feels like we probably should.
Okay. I think I like it.
We'll see what that looks like in for real.
All right. Our question of the day. What was BYU's best football or men's basketball moment from year 2 in the Big 12? All right. In response to our elite voice of the day, presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated, at Gen X BYU fan on X, posted this caption with this video.
And it is through! And where there's a will, there is a way!
And the caption was the mic drop.
I just dropped the mic.
Just dropping the mic, and it absolutely was a mic drop. All right, today's Rise and Shout Out, presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics. We got quite a few of them.
A working list. Lexi Holiday Lowry for breaking the 5K record. Lily Owens, that walk-off hit to beat the Utes last night. Hayden Kuhn was outstanding on the hill. He got the win against Arizona last night. And men's volleyball, all the seniors on their big night tonight and tomorrow night.
All right, thanks to today's guests, Jimmer Fredette, Teyon Taylor, and Mix Romanus.
Conversation continues all weekend long, 24/7 on X, Instagram, and Facebook. Everything on demand at BYUSN.com.
All right, for Dave, I'm Jason. Shout out to Bronson Larson. See you tonight for BYU Baseball and Softball on ESPN Plus and on BYU Radio. Have a happy Easter, everybody. And as always, go Cougs.